You know, I always like to take this opportunity to talk about myself.
Woo!
Looking man, the best dressed man. You know why? Woo, because my name's Ric Flair.
Woo!
Hello and welcome back to the only 7-star wrestling radio show on planet Earth. This is Indie Wrestling Radio. I am your co-host, the Sly One, Jordan Fox, and with me, as always, the man, the myth, the Floyd Johnson Jr. Floyd, what's up, bro?
What's going on? What's going on? I'm having a good one. I've been working a lot lately, so just struggling through and watching some wrestling.
Dude, I feel like we haven't been together in 6 months, man. We took, like 5 days off, and it feels like 6 months.
Yeah, it feels like forever. It was like yesterday when I hit you up. I mean, hit you up about doing the show in the morning. I was like, dude, I haven't talked to him in forever.
Yeah, so we were supposed to, just to let everyone know, we were supposed to be back yesterday for the chairshot.com and everybody. But I did not get in till about 3 or 4 hours before we usually start the show. I stayed late at the show in Roy City, Texas, and helped break down everything. And, which I'm not complaining. I had fun cause I was still hanging out with everybody, but it made for a really, really late night, 3.5 hour drive home. So I hit you up and I was like, man, let's just start back fresh on Tuesday. You were all about it. So I was like, sweet. But dude, real quick, let's talk about, what happened in Roy City. I was telling you about this right before we went live, but we had an awesome show down there, man. And I was telling you that, we have a phenomenal performer by the name of the Outlaw Randy Wayne. And, we talked about how he's been picking on me backstage. He's been giving me noogies. And the line of the night was when he was out in the ring, I was telling my broadcast partner that he's been picking on me backstage. And I said, Randy, I tried to get a word with Randy backstage. And you know what he did? He gave me a noogie and then pushed me down on my ass. Well, he treats me like I'm a kid, but I'm a man, Randy. I'm 30. And dude, it was the funniest line of the night, dude. I cannot wait for that to air. There was an awesome match between Bam Bam Malone and Chandler Hopkins. You know Chandler Hopkins. You
the
might
truth.
Know. Yeah, the truth. The young gun now. Now he's the young gun, Chandler Hopkins. But dude, you look at him, and I think he's only been wrestling. Chandler Hopkins has only been wrestling like 2.5 years. And he wrestles like he's a 10-year vet. Like, the dude is absolutely phenomenal.
Dude is amazing. I mean, he is one of those people, when you see his look, how he takes care of his body and in the ring, he very much has that it factor. I've been very clear and open. I just think more eyes need to be on him, and I think he'll end up, you know, somewhere.
Absolutely.
Because I definitely think you know, they have the developmental where they get people that have never wrestled before. I definitely think he would fit in with WWE developmental.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, man. He's the perfect mixture of power moves. He's got an aerial assault. He's got, I mean, he does lucha rolls like nobody's business. I mean, dude, he's just absolutely phenomenal, man. And I always like to add that he's only been wrestling for 2 years because you see him. He does not look like someone that's only been wrestling 2 years. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And it's absolutely phenomenal, man. We got to see Malico and Doc Hill work again. Fly Def and the Impact Players. Impact Players are a three-man faction that wrestles a lot in the DFW area. They're making a lot of waves with MPX, with Heroes of Wrestling, and then Fly Def, who is Zach Zilla and Warren Jay. I don't think you've got to see them live yet.
I don't think I have either.
They are a tag team from Booker T School, and they're actually former Reality of Wrestling tag team champions. So you know that if Booker T put the tag straps on them, you know he thinks pretty highly of them. And dude, they're two phenomenal guys. They're it's really cool to see them work because Zach Zilla is this real muscular and kind of ground based wrestler. And then Warren Jay is a skinnier, still well-built, but a skinnier, more of a high flyer. And so, like, you know, they kind of feed off each other in that aspect. You know, it's kind of the best of both worlds. So it's really cool to see them work. Obviously, we talk every month, we talk about Will Alday and Brock Baker. Will Alday and Andy Dalton had a phenomenal match, dude. So to talk about Andy Dalton for a minute... I've never heard anything bad about Andy Dalton, right? But I did not grow up in the Texas scene. So, you know, all I knew was some stuff on Reputation about Andy, about him being a phenomenal worker. He's been doing it since he was like 16, 17. But I seen this 15-minute short video that, if you haven't watched it yet, Floyd, I'm going to send it to you. And I need to see if it's, I need to try to share it on Twitter, so the people that follow us on Twitter, and I've been meaning to get it to Darren too, our boy Darren. So I need to try to share that on Twitter and everything. But anyway, it's this wrestling media company called I Shoot Wrestling that goes in and shoots pay-per-views for different wrestling indie promotions all around Texas, Missouri, and Oklahoma. They did a 15-minute short film on Andy Dalton and an upcoming match, or a match that he had with Sammy Callahan in, I think, San Antonio. And it showed, you know, the history of Andy Dalton and how much of how close in skills and how close in style Sammy Callahan and Andy Dalton are. And, dude, this match, I end up watching it on YouTube, and this match gave me a whole new respect for Andy Dalton and Sammy Callahan, man. I'm gonna send you the link. You gotta watch it. It's only 15 minutes.
No problem. Yeah, I'll definitely watch it.
And it was really cool. It was really cool. Andy Dalton's dad, I learned this the other night in Roy City as well, that his dad was Frank Dalton, who wrestled in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And in, I think it was when he was in WCCW, he was actually the handler for Kamala, which I thought was really cool. That's what Will Riggs told me, my broadcast partner told me. So anyway, really cool, man. And so I got to spend a few minutes with Andy. He'll actually be up here wrestling in Canadian January 12th. He'll be, Wesley Crane is taking a break from wrestling, and he requested that his final match for the time being be against Andy Dalton. And so Andy Dalton said, you know, I'll take the challenge. So he's coming up to Canadian January 12th and working for WFC. So anybody that's in the Tulsa, McAllister, Oklahoma City area, you'll be able to see a phenomenal match between two great competitors if you want to come on down to Canadian, which is kind of by where I live, actually. So, but yeah, dude, just absolutely phenomenal show, man. It was one of the best shows that I've been a part of, because I really had a breakthrough on my character, on my commentating character. I kind of worked on a bit of the backstory and got to, in any time that people look at me and think about a phenomenal wrestler like Randy Wayne, that's a plus for me, if that makes sense. Like, if they look at Randy Wayne and they're like, oh, shit, he's a badass. He's the guy that Jordan Fox says he's been picking on him backstage. Like, that's awesome for me, you know, because at least some of the fans are thinking about me. Does that make sense? Like...
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, I wanted to make sure. I'm not trying to make it sound like, oh, people look at Randy and think of me. That's not what I mean. Like, I just mean, like, you know, that that we have this, like, this running back story now that Randy Wayne's picking on me backstage, and it's just awesome. And I told Randy about it afterwards. And so when I went to say goodbye to Randy later on that night, he was like, sorry about that noogie backstage. And I was like, oh, it was kind of like he gave me the okay to keep going with the storyline. So I was like, hell yeah, man, that's awesome. So anyway, phenomenal match. Phenomenal show. Can't wait for it to air on Facebook. We were told Sunday, we were told two nights ago, this is the last thing that I'll say about Heroes of Wrestling. Now, if you have the Hopper, if you have Dish Network and you have the Hopper, you can get in there and search Heroes of Wrestling and we'll pop up and you can now watch us through Dish Network. So that's really cool. So anybody that's got Dish Network with the Hopper, I don't know. I don't have Dish Network, so I don't know exactly how it works, but that's how our sponsors, Young Ideas, which is a...
So that's like their on-demand feature, the Hopper.
Yes. That's from what I understand. On-demand. For those of us that have like DirecTV and know what on-demand is, I guess the Hopper is their version of on-demand, like Floyd just said. And so you can search for us on there and watch some of our past episodes now. So that's really cool. So it's just another avenue that people can watch some really good independent wrestling that Texas has to offer. So really cool, man. But we're here to talk about some Raw now, man. So what did you think about Raw last night?
Okay. I actually watched it after a football game, and I kept hearing how bad it was not to watch it. I watched it, and then I realized it wasn't the most beginning to end of the show entertaining, but I'm going to take a little bit of a different approach and say it served a purpose. It had to happen. That episode had to happen.
Okay, you want to break it down for me a little bit? Because I was...
Okay.
I'd like to know what part. What part is that? Because I'm looking for the glass is half full. You know, that's kind of our gimmick. So yeah. Last night they made it kind of hard to look for that. You know what I mean?
All right. So you got to think of Survivor Series as like the season finale, right?
Okay.
That was the season finale. It ended a lot of the storylines, right?
Okay.
And you got to think of Raw last week as the cliffhanger to the season finale with Braun Strowman getting injured, right?
Okay.
So you're kind of, you got your main star gone, right? So this week, and Braun's going to be gone for a few weeks. So what you're doing this week is you're establishing the mountain Braun has to climb. So what you're going to get is them, their big bads, their new big bads, their new main villains. This show established Baron Corbin as the number one heel on Raw.
Okay. Okay, this, I can see it.
He is the head heel of the men's division. This show established Nia Jax as the main heel of the women's division. And it established Alexa Bliss in a new authority position. It wasn't about extending storylines. It was about setting up storylines. Now, you got Baron, who's the bad guy, and now he has this extra power. This power, he can change matches in the middle of the match. How do you over... No, like, literally. Like, if you're thinking of it as a bad guy, it would be like a bad guy that can make you blind or take your power away.
That's a valid point. Like, he can do whatever he wants to change the match, right? Like, you make him submit, oh, you can only win by throwing me over the top rope.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You get rolled up. Oh, I forgot to say, it was a no roll-ups match.
Yeah, submission-only match.
Yeah, so there you go. So they established him, not only as a heel, they established him as having a superpower. And what as he's your supervillain, and now he has his two goons, Drew McIntyre and Bobby Lashley.
Yep.
So
I see it. That's a good point.
He's the main heel, and now he has his two goons. Now you have an established hierarchy that when Braun comes back, he has to go through all of that to get to the top. And that's before he has to go face Brock Lesnar. So you literally have now given your heel that's going to your face that's coming back insurmountable mountain to climb, which is perfect for Braun because it's hard to make him sympathetic because he's 7 foot, 300 pounds. But the fact that he has to fight three people just to get the title, get to Baron Corbin to get the title shot that he was always promised, you have now set the stage for when Braun comes back.
I see your point.
From segment to segment, the show wasn't entertaining, but the big picture, it really needed to happen because you didn't have a main heel on the company. You didn't have a main face. These roles weren't established. It was kind of like after Survivor Series, it was kind of up. You don't got Brock Lesnar, so he's not a heel or a face. You know, you have the feud with Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose, but this was establishing roles going forward.
I see. Yeah, okay. I mean, you make sense. It laid the groundwork, and I like it. I like it a lot.
So, like, let's say you're watching a TV show.
Okay.
Like, the Iron Fist. I was watching Iron Fist this week. The thing about Marvel's comics on Netflix, it usually takes about 3 to 4 episodes for something to happen.
Okay.
But once it starts happening, it's like action, action, action. It's like, dude, I never want to stop watching it. Like, once I got to episode 6, I pretty much finished the rest in one sitting because that's when it started breaking down. Right now, we're dealing with episode 1 and 2. They're really establishing Baron Corbin as a dominant asshole heel. So you'll probably get at least another week of this. Like, next week, it'll be Baron Corbin and Baron Corbin and Drew McIntyre versus Elias and Finn Balor in the main event. And it'll probably end the same way with Baron Corbin on top. Then in a couple weeks, you'll start seeing his power break down.
I can see it.
It's kind of how you watch it. It's the difference between writing a good wrestling program and writing a TV show. And WWE writes a TV show.
Yeah. Dude, you put it like that. That's a really good way to put it. Now that you mentioned that. Sorry, I'll set my coffee down. That's a really cool way to put that. I'm gonna have to put that in today's show title. Is WWE is not writing wrestling, they're writing TV. Because yeah. I do see your point. Like, if you look at Survivor Series as Season 6, Episode 10, the Season 6 finale of Game of Thrones, like, when Season 7 starts back, which is last night's Raw, it's not going to be, like, this action-packed episode. It's gonna basically start a few new storylines and maybe end one or two big storylines.
Yeah.
So I see your point.
Yeah, because they even established Braun as a sympathetic face by showing you the big bruise on his elbow and telling you he's going to be out for a long time and they don't know if he's going to be back for TLC. Come on.
Yeah.
Come on. Yeah. Come on. Man, that was some good makeup on his elbow.
Yeah, it was, because it looked legit. And dude, he's buff, dude. You see him completely without no shirt on, man. Dude, like, I mean, his chest was very defined. I mean, his arms and his shoulders, like, he's in great shape. He's not just this big monster. Like, you can tell that he's in phenomenal shape. You know what I mean?
He's still the most physically scary human being I've ever met.
I wouldn't doubt it. I've never met him, but I would not doubt it.
No, like I said, it was like WrestleMania 32. We were at the Access shop, and he was standing, like, behind the wall just kind of playing around. He's big, goofy dude. But, you know, you thought it was, like, a reflection or was somebody standing on a chair because he's just that big and that wide.
Wow. Yeah, that's insane. I got a question for you. Okay, so in your opinion, do you think we're getting a little bit too much Baron Corbin? Because that's a big deal on the internet right now, is why is Baron Corbin the GM? And then he's in two different storylines. He was involved in the first match. He was involved in the main event. He was involved in the beatdown. And we had two segments, three segments in between there, Baron Corbin being in there. Like, I guess a lot of people on Twitter, and I've got a couple of them in my notes, and we'll read them as the day goes, as the show goes on. But people are wondering, you know, why is he still wrestling? You know, there was even someone that complained. I think Brian Alvarez complained, or no, Dave Meltzer complained to Brian Alvarez about him wrestling in slacks, and you know, just on and on and on.
Yes. So,
if do you think we're getting too much, Baron? Basically, is what I'm asking you for your taste personally.
I don't. I love Baron Corbin, but let me tell you, if you hate Baron Corbin for being on your TV too much, okay, that's his job as a heel. If you hate Baron Corbin for getting in every segment, that's his job as a heel. If you hate him for wearing slacks while he wrestles, he's a heel. You're not supposed to like anything about him.
Okay, yeah, that's a valid point.
Yeah, I hate that you wrestle in slacks. Great. I need you to hate me. I feed off of your hate.
Oh, well, let's run down a little bit of what happened last night. So, the show starts off, we have Baron Corbin, Leo Rush, Bobby Lashley, and Drew McIntyre in the ring. How come we didn't have Dolph Ziggler in the ring? Any idea?
I think they kind of just went their separate ways.
So, that's a done deal then, you think?
I mean, I don't think it's going to be like, they're not going to actually fully break up, but I just think Dolph's going to just start doing stuff on his own more.
Okay.
He's not a part of that new power faction they got going on. This new authority that they've created, Dolph's not a new part of it.
Okay.
They might add him in the next couple of weeks, but right now, even last week, it established Bobby Lashley, Baron Corbin, and Drew McIntyre as this group.
Okay, I got you. So Corbin starts running down the fans. He's praising how great of a GM he's been. They share the stuff they're thankful for, I'm assuming, because, you know, Thanksgiving was this week and everything like that. You know, they all had some kind of, like, heelish stuff to say. They show some footage of them shattering Braun's elbow. And then Corbin says he sent a camera to Alabama with Braun to see him being prepped for surgery. We see Braun, and like you were just talking about, he shows off his extremely muscular upper body. They have some great great makeup on his elbow. It really did look like it looked just as good as Triple H's pec tear, and I'm not saying this isn't a real injury, but that wasn't makeup, and I feel like Braun's has a lot of makeup on it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that was definitely makeup.
But it looked good. They did a great job on it, is what I'm getting at. He said that the doctor has never seen an injury this bad or an arm this big. I probably call bullshit on that. He says he plans to return at 100% and give the men that hurt him these hands. Corbin says Braun won't be cleared for TLC, and when he doesn't show up, he'll win via forfeit. And then he ends with, "You're either with us or you're against us," which reminded me of Eric Bischoff when he was running WCW. You remember when he used to say that stuff?
Yeah, he's basically, I mean, he's playing like every power heel ever. Like
It's
like, what if Eric Bischoff actually wrestled? What if Vince McMahon actually wrestled?
It's a good point. We get the lights go out. Did you know who it was as soon as the lights went out? Because I didn't. I was like, who is it?
I thought it was, what's his name? Bray Wyatt.
I kind of thought that for a second, too. I guess they're still repackaging him and getting some new stuff. I don't know if he's working house shows or what he's doing, but
he did. He worked Starrcade.
Oh, did he work Starrcade?
He didn't televise it, but he was on the section. He was on the section that they didn't televise.
Gotcha. Yeah, apparently they're doing some stuff with him. From what I read, they're not like repackaging him. He's still going to be like the scary guy, but I guess they're just taking him off TV for a while and letting him get some fresh ideas going on in his head. I don't know. But Elias arrives and says that these idiots in the ring need to understand that WWE stands for Walk with Elias. So when did Elias make this face turn, bro? Any idea?
The whole thing where he got in a fight in the backstage with Baron Corbin.
So that was the big turning point right there?
He didn't have a big face turn. I mean, and that to me is bad.
Yeah.
He just kind of went face. I think something that's missing in wrestling is the big dramatic face turn.
Yeah.
Where you just, like, you're a bad guy, but the bad guy that you're with steps over the line and you have that dramatic turn. I think Elias is one of those people that definitely could have benefited from it.
Yeah, I think that would have been a very hot moment to see him, like, you know, see the wheel turning in his head, like, oh man, that's not the route that I want to take. Like, I'm a bad guy, but that's over the line. I've got to stand up for this guy, or I've got to stand up for this town, or you know what I mean.
Yeah, like maybe it'd be in the back and you have Charlie back there and she's interviewing and Baron comes and just like reams her for not doing something that he wants her to do. And, you know, like, you know, he's about to fire her and then Elias steps in, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Something that simple. But the big dramatic face turn, they love doing the big dramatic heel turns, but they don't do the big dramatic face turns.
Yeah, I think that would be cool. I think that's a good point. But yeah, I think it's kind of a mistake to have Elias not as a heel, man. Him running down the town every week is what so many of us looked forward to. You know? Like, because that was.
But now he does the same thing. He just runs down his opponents.
Right. But I mean, yeah, I guess you're right. I don't know. Well, I guess we'll just see how.
I mean, it's not as good, yeah. Really, but the fans seem to be more into him as a face than they were as a heel.
You think, like, so?
Like last night when he did Walk with Elias, I mean, I've heard it, you know, I've heard it at WrestleMania, so it was definitely louder there, but that was pretty damn loud.
I got you. All right. Fair enough. We get Lashley versus Elias. The match went just under 14 minutes. Lashley ends up winning.
After Baron Corbin changes the rules.
Yeah, it was Leo Rush. Yeah, Leo Rush pulls out the ref as Elias is getting the pin. Did you see, I don't know if this was what was meant to happen or if Leo Rush messed up, but after he pulled him out of the ring, he, like, goes to throw his sport jacket off, but it gets caught, like, on his left arm, so he puts the coat back on. Did you see that?
Yes.
I didn't know if it was meant to be like that or if he was, like, meant to throw off the coat at that time, like, in disgust or something. I don't know, but I just thought it was funny. But, yeah, you're right. After Leo Rush pulls him out, and the ref has the bell rung, Baron Corbin grabs the mic and said, "He attacked us so quickly, I didn't have time to announce this, but this is a no DQ match, blah, 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 blah." They end up, Elias takes a pretty good ass whooping for the latter part of the match. He ends up getting pinned by Lashley. I thought the match was, in the grand scheme of things, it served its purpose because Elias, being the outnumbered babyface, you know, is going to have to take an ass whooping, right?
Yeah.
To further the storyline. I want to read a tweet about this match. I found on Twitter when I was playing on Twitter this morning. I looked up the WWE Raw hashtag, and they were talking about the first match, and it says, "If you like complete bullshit and Baron Corbin, this match was for you. I can't think of anyone in wrestling I hate watching more than Corbin right now. Please get Drew away from Corbin as soon as possible." I don't know if all the hate that Baron Corbin gets is necessary or if that is just because he's a heel. Like, I don't know.
No. I mean, it's cross. I mean, it's 50-50 on Baron.
Is it?
It's 50% he's a heel and 50% go away heat.
Yeah, I don't.
There is definitely some go away heat in there.
Yeah, when Baron Corbin first changed up his character and he was wrestling in full, and you remember we were doing the show together at this time, and he was not even taking off his shirt or his vest or anything to wrestle. At first, I was like, come on, man, like, get some wrestling tights. But the more and more I watch him, I'm like, man, that's what kind of makes it, like, he's making me hate him. So his character is actually doing what he's supposed to be doing. So,
yeah,
like, I quickly changed my tone to, you know, I'm disgusted from him by, like, bro, you need to change your clothes. Like, you know, like, almost within kayfabe, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and the whole thing with Baron Corbin is, you know, when it's this kind of, when you have this kind of hate, you know, you need someone that can handle it. Not a lot of people can handle being, you know, universally not liked. Baron Corbin literally does not give a crap what anyone thinks of him. So, there you go.
Right.
It works for him.
Yeah, I dig it. I dig it. Baron Corbin fires a production assistant for turning off the lights for Elias's entrance. He runs into Alexa Bliss. She says he's doing an amazing job and is here to help. Corbin puts her in charge of the women's division.
The entire division.
Yes. Real quick, someone tweeted, so she's Karen Jarrett now, running through knockout law?
Yeah!
Do you think that it will, that storyline is going to progress to where Alexa Bliss screws him out of the entire GM job and becomes general manager of Raw?
I think it may temporarily go like that.
Okay.
But I'm really digging her in the power suit. I think, yeah, I mean, Alexa Bliss is smoking hot. I think that's almost redundant to say because it's so obvious. But, yeah, and everybody's like, well, is she Karen Jarrett? I'm like, see, no. Alexa Bliss has talent. No disrespect to Karen Jarrett. I mean, she was there, but, you know, Alexa Bliss, you put her on the mic, she is special. Yeah. You know, she is really good on the mic. She might be the best on the roster as far as women on the mic and telling the story that she's supposed to tell. She's really good at it. So, yeah, I've seen storylines, and they do it with a guy, and it doesn't work, and they come back and do the same storyline with someone more talented, and it works.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to work because now you have Ronda Rousey and her world title stuff, and now you'll have Alexa picking on Sasha and Bayley, and it's like, okay, now you're gonna have what, two or three women storylines, where, you know, it used to be you lucky if you got one.
Right. Yeah, that's a valid point. It's a valid point. And I think with Alexa Bliss in that, you know, like, assistant GM role, taking over the women's division, that might give us a little bit less Baron Corbin, which is what a lot of people are, not a lot of people, but there are people that are wanting less Baron Corbin. So there you go. I actually read in the Observer newsletter that Alexa Bliss is getting a kayfabe front office gig, you know, like this assistant GM or a women's general manager, because she's having problems passing her concussion protocol.
Yeah, test. Her impact test.
Yeah, apparently she had a couple of concussions in the last year, and they're worried about some test results or something to that effect. And I don't mean that, I'm not trying to, like, get anyone, like, worked up saying, oh my God, does she got, like, lesions on her brain? I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that they are either being taking extra precautions, or she's still something's not right. You know what I mean? Or maybe everything's fine and they just advised her to take a month out of the ring. You never know. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Meltzer did not go into specifics. He just said that she's having problems fully passing the concussion protocol testing. So, and, you know, me and you've talked a lot about, you know, we would much rather see safe wrestling and see guys being able to wrestle into their 50s than, you know what I mean, than anything else. So,
well, and I'm hoping with the new TV deal, they go the 3 days a week. I know it probably won't happen, but I just think it's the smartest thing for wrestlers to avoid concussions is to work less.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with that. And if you're making $2 billion over the next 5 years off of your two TV shows, you don't need to be running 500 house shows a year, do you?
Yeah, just run Friday. Like, for the SmackDown people, their first day of the week be Friday. They work Friday, Saturday, Sunday. For the Raw people, they work Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
Yeah, dude, I agree.
And then they have time to heal, time to rest. You know, it works out better that way.
I agree 100%, man. I completely agree. I think they're off a week,
and like, let's say you want them to make an appearance on NXT, maybe not a non-working, you know, non-wrestling, but make an appearance on NXT like the main roster actually cares about the NXT roster. I mean, there's a lot of things you can do with those extra days. They could do more appearances in different places where they're not getting, you know, they're not taking bumps or whatever. It's just there's a lot more stuff that you can do not doing shows.
Absolutely. You could have, theoretically, if you think about it, you could use them way more often in the brand ambassador role if they're not working 250 matches a year. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like if they're wrestling Saturday, Sunday, Monday, you know, if they're on Raw and you got an event, some special anti-bullying event in Chicago on a Thursday, you can send someone from Raw because you know they're going to be off that day and aren't going to be in Toledo, Ohio at a house show.
Yeah, 3 days a week, 156. That's 156 days a year. I mean, and I'm not including, I know in April and in November they go do that, those long European tours. I understand, keep those. But I'm just saying, but when they're stateside, only work 3 days a week.
Yeah, I totally agree. There's enough talent out there that they could do that. And it, you know what? On top of that, if you listen to this past weekend's WrestleNomics episode, they break down that the model that WWE is using right now for house shows is not very lucrative for them right now. That their attendance for the non-televised house shows is way down.
Yeah. And that's what I'm just saying, because like me, I don't go to house shows. They don't count.
Yeah.
They don't count.
I agree.
And it's just like they used to be where they would go to house shows and they would test new stuff out and they would try to get the stuff ready for like a big pay-per-view match, right?
Right.
They don't even do that anymore.
Yeah.
They wrestle, I wouldn't call it safe, but they wrestle a conservative style. And it's kind of boring, and it's like, seriously, I'm one of those people, I'd rather save that money from that house show and put it towards me going to WrestleMania.
Right, I agree. Word, my friend. So I know I mentioned this, but now I want what you think the chances are that this is going to happen. Alexa Bliss screwing over Baron Corbin and taking over as complete GM of Monday Night Raw. What do you think the chances are it happens?
Okay, this is how I'm going to say it. If she doesn't, if her impact testing doesn't get better, I'd say 80%.
Ooh.
If it does, I'd say 40%.
Okay, I see.
Because she might be so good in that role that they still might like, well, we like you more in this GM role than we do as a wrestler.
Right.
Which a lot of people don't realize that happens. If you show a real talent, like Baron Corbin has started to shine in this GM role. That's why he's getting more time.
Yeah.
Because he plays the douchebag character that they want really, really well.
It's so true.
He plays it really, really well. And people are like, I'm tired of him on my screen. Good.
Yeah.
Because if you get to the point where you're looking forward to him on the screen, he's not really doing his job at that point.
Right, right. Next, we get highlights of the Seth Rollins-Dean Ambrose feud. Then we get a video of Ambrose with his personal physician, which his physician's office looked eerily similar to the physician's office in Alabama that Braun Strowman was in. So he was getting a checkup and wasn't at Raw, Dean Ambrose, that is. He knows Seth is happy, and that's why he's doing his open challenge tonight. Ambrose goes on to mock the fans. He gets a flu shot and a rabies shot. He said there's nothing that can wash away Seth's sins and no medicine that can heal him. At TLC, he will put Seth out of his misery. What'd you think about this?
Honestly, I've seen better. I picked up he carried over the intensity, but the running down fans thing seemed like cheap heat that he didn't really need to do. I think he could have still hated on Seth without doing the whole fan stuff.
Yeah.
And great sex appeal shots for all the women that are attracted to really buff guys, because him pulling down his pants to get in the shot, I saw more than a few tweets about that.
I'll tell you one thing that I did like that a lot of people on Twitter did not like. That's Corey Graves tries to ask Renee about Dean's state of mind, and she has no answer. People were saying how dumb this was. Actually, that was on Twitter. I seen people saying how they didn't like that. And Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez, I listened to early this morning when I was getting my notes together, they don't like it. They say that it hurts Renee's credibility, yada, yada, yada. But I completely disagree. I love that they're not shying away from the fact that Renee Young and Dean Ambrose are married. They're like, psh, bro, they're married. Everyone knows it. We might as well put it into the storyline. So,
but yeah, I mean, but that's his job. I don't tell my wife everything I do at my job.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and he has a problem with someone. She doesn't need to know everything that goes on in his mind, long as he's good to her.
Right.
I just like to me, I was like, non-kayfabe. I mean, this happens in marriages all across the country.
Right. Right.
Yeah. It's like.
Yeah, I like it. I like it.
Yeah, she was like, what do you want me to do? And I'm like, I think it serves. And the fact that Cole badges her and she fights back, I thought it was more definitely, I respect her more.
Yeah, same here. Same here. I like it. I like it. If they're worried about ruining Renee's credibility, we got something here in just a second that I'm going to mention that is way more likely to ruin her credibility in wrestling fans' eyes than not having an answer for why Dean Ambrose is upset. And that actually, that's right here. So we get the Lucha House Party versus the Revival. The Revival come out and rightfully discuss the bullshit and unfair rules of last week's handicap match, but still, it's Lucha House rules, which means 3-on-2. And real quick, Renee says that the only people that don't like the Lucha House Party rules are wrestling traditionalists, and she says that they are changing the game forever with these rules.
It's a handicap match.
Thank you.
How is this changing the game?
Thank you. Thank you. If people are worried about Renee Young's credibility going down the tube, I'm here to tell you it has nothing to do with Dean Ambrose. It has everything to do with whoever the hell is in her ear telling her that wrestling traditionalists don't like Lucha House Party rules. That is so stupid.
I am glad you brought this up. I actually wrote a line about this in my notes that I accidentally left at work. I just thought, like, if you want anything to make her look like dumb blonde chick, that was that.
Yep.
There is nothing innovative about a 3-on-2 handicap match.
That's so true.
There's nothing innovative.
No, the only innovative thing is this is the first time in probably wrestling history that the three-person team is trying to be the face of the situation. That's
exactly.
So
and they
dumb.
They don't have to tag. They don't. I'm like, this is not Lucha House Party rules. This is cheating. Even in pure Lucha Libre, the matches are 2 versus 2.
Right.
Now, you could say, okay, it's Lucha rules where, you know, you don't have to tag out. They're a lot more liberal with the tag teams. You know, you can tag from outside of the ring. You know, there's really no 5-second count. If you want to do all that stuff, that makes perfect sense. Those are Lucha rules, but it's still 2-on-2. The fact that you give them an extra person.
Right.
Yeah. That's just hellish.
I agree.
Why would Baron Corbin, who supposedly hates the Lucha House Party, even sound off on this?
No idea. Not surprising. Lucha House Party defeats the Revival 2 minutes and 25 seconds, and bearing the Revival continues.
Actually, they're not being buried because they're losing handicap matches.
That's true. That's very true. Next, we see them hyping Lars Sullivan as the hottest free agent in wrestling. What is, have you been reading about all this bad press that Lars has been getting online? Do you know anything about this?
I've read about it. We actually talked about it on Around the Ring. It's the bad part of wrestling fandom.
Got you.
I don't like that you got called up, so I am going to mine everything that you've ever put online and try to find a reason for them not to call you up.
Wow.
And that's what they're doing. I mean, some of these posts are 12 years old.
12 years?
Yeah. This one about Phillip Rivers was on a weightlifting forum that he was in when he was like 18 to 20 years old.
Oh my God.
So yes, they are literally mining the internet to go after him simply because they don't like how he wrestles and doesn't think he deserved to be called up.
And this is just fans?
Yeah, fans.
Yeah.
This is, like I said, and it's like most of the wrestlers, the things he said, they're ignoring because he wasn't affiliated with the WWE. He was just a fan on the internet, just like anybody else.
Yeah, he hadn't went through the social media training
that the WWE is. And let me make it clear, I understand this is not acceptable now, but I think you're around my age,
mm-hmm.
The South Park, in high school, in college area, everything was gay.
Yeah, I agree. I hate to admit it. But yes, I did when I was of a younger age. Me and everyone that I knew referred to stuff that was lame and stuff like that as gay.
Yes.
It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing to admit, but I have to say that I did also take part in it.
And that's why I was like, I got to make it clear. I want to tell you how. Like, I go up to get pizza at lunch. You don't have any more pepperoni, gay. Ah, damn it, that's gay. Somebody called shotgun for me, gay. You know,
right.
It was stupid. It wasn't referring to homosexuality to us. It wasn't. It wasn't gay bashing to us. But it was still the word being used.
Right.
So, yes, if you show me any post from 10 to 12 years ago and they're overusing the word gay, they're just being like everyone else was at that time.
Right, yeah, the, how do I want to word this? Like, the situation, it doesn't make it, you know, you and I are not condoning it, we're just saying that it was a different time. If we could go back and change it, we obviously would. You know, I would be more concerned if Lars Sullivan was, you know, 6 months ago was calling everything gay, you know what I mean? But
yeah.
12 years ago, I mean, everything... It was the norm to be saying stuff like that. Doesn't make it right, but you know what I mean.
I mean, right, wrong, or indifferent. He was a stupid kid.
Yeah.
I don't really hold anything, most things, I mean, I'm not going to say anything. There's some things that I'm going to hold against you. But when you're 18 to 21, if you do any of the regular 18 to 21 dumb shit, I'm not holding that against you.
Yeah. It seems like that people are just... From everything I read, it seems like some stupid, you know, just fans having a vendetta against this guy for no reason.
They don't like him. They don't think he should be called up. And that's the world we kind of live in now. I mean, as much as people say they're anti-bullying, he's being bullied.
Yeah. True. Has he responded to this at all? Do you know?
No, not at all. And yeah. The smart thing is not to let them know they're getting to you.
Agreed.
And they're like, man, the WWE's got to get rid of them. I was like, they just did a show in Saudi Arabia. Screw you and your morals. They don't care.
Yeah, that's dumb. That's absolutely
like,
dumb.
Do you know where this rates on their list?
Yeah, that's I agree with you. I agree 100%. That's so dumb to say they need to get rid of him.
No, this is not even on Vince's radar. Yeah. I doubt Vince even knows it's going on.
Yeah, I would probably agree. He either doesn't know what's going on, or he knows every single detail. You know, it's never in between, right?
Yeah.
Like, he knows, he's already got his thumb on it, or he's completely oblivious. That's how I always picture situations with Vince
this
McMahon.
This is how, I feel like Trips is the information guy. Okay, like, Trips knows about it, he knows about it, and his job is to handle it.
Right.
And if he can't handle it, then he brings Vince in.
Makes sense.
And he probably looked at this and said, "This is stupid." Like, I don't care. This is not even something to take to Vince.
Right, right. Next, we get Nia Jax and Tamina. These are my front runners for women's tag team champions if we ever get those belts.
I got a question.
Yep, let's hear it.
Are these the two most boring promos you've ever heard in your life?
Oh my God, they were for last night for show. For sure.
Like Nia, she's well spoken, but it was like she was trying to go for something and it wasn't landing. And I can't tell you what. I think she was trying to go for bitchy.
Yeah,
I'm better than you, almost.
Right, right. Like, I've just got too much stuff to do. Like, and I'm not making fun of her. Like, she was purposely, she was like overdoing it, trying to get it across, but it wasn't.
It wasn't landing.
It wasn't landing.
It just wasn't. And right. this is from someone that is a Nia fan.
Right.
It's just like, this is not your comfort zone.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
And it was painful because no one was reacting to her.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Ronda Rousey came out and they did the Ronda chant. But other than that, no one was reacting to her.
Yeah.
To what she was saying.
Did you see when Ronda Rousey, so what happened was, is, you know, Nia talks for a while, Ronda ends up coming out, Ronda starts talking, and then she tries to tell Nia, she tries to, like, whisper to Nia Jax, it seemed like, hey, we're going to give them a minute. But it picked it up on the microphone. Did you notice that?
I did not hear that. No, I didn't.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't, like, extremely loud, but it was almost like she was, you know, same thing that, like with her match with Charlotte, you know, remember they were like, why is she basically yelling out these spots? It was kind of like she was doing that, except, you know, on a promo. She was like, well, I guess we're going to give them a second because the crowd was chanting. I don't know. It was just kind of funny.
Oh, yeah, I did notice that part. I thought that was on purpose.
Oh, did? Yeah. It could be. I probably should rewatch it, but I thought she was kind of trying to whisper it to her and forgot to put the microphone all the way down.
No, it just felt like, she was being an asshole because, you know, they were chanting for her and not Nia. So I'm just going to give them a second.
I see. Okay. That makes sense. Nia Jax continuously is mocking Rousey. Rousey shows up. She says that Jax did win the Battle Royal and praises her punching power and changed things with that one punch. But Nia Jax's luck is about to run out at TLC because she's going to rip her arm off and slap Charlotte with it. But since she's eager to fight and Rousey is ready, she offers Nia Jax a shot right here and now. Nia Jax declines, noting that she can beat her. I don't know if that's the first time I've ever put noting in my own notes, but noting that she could beat her right now, but she's just stalling. Tamina looks to attack, but Natalya arrives and is instantly jumped by the Riot Squad. This was pretty convoluted, didn't you think?
It was messy.
Yes.
And it was messy and convoluted, and I didn't like it. But just think about it. Just think about the world we're living in now. There is the Ronda versus Nia thing. Then Ronda has a problem with Charlotte and Becky. And Becky has a problem with everybody, right?
Right.
So you got the one Ronda leaf of this, Ronda and Nia. Then you got Natalya versus the Riot Squad, right?
Right.
And then they later established Alexa and her crew versus Sasha and Bayley. We have three independent women storylines going on right now.
Yeah. I like it.
And women doesn't. I mean, I don't know if that's ever happened.
Yeah, that might be a that might be a first. And you know, it's not all having to do with the world title either. You know, most of the time, that's about the only storyline we get is involving the world title. But this actually has some personal feelings mixed in with the whole situation, which actually kind of makes it, you know, makes it seem more honest, I guess you would say. But when you have people like Nia Jax and Tamina cutting a lot of the promos like they did last night, it was kind of boring.
Their promos didn't land last night. I was gonna say, and it was probably because we'd already seen Baron Corbin do the long promo thing, and now during the middle of the show, you do the long promo thing with two people that aren't really that great on the mic yet.
Yeah.
Now, Ronda, I can say, she's only been doing this a year. But, you know, Nia, I just think that's not her thing.
Right.
Like what Tamina was doing, that was kind of perfect. You know, just stand there and look like a badass.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So this thing with Nia, she's just not, and the whole bitchy thing doesn't work when you're 6 foot, 200, you know. The dominant thing. She can be the face breaker, but she needs to turn up cocky more than bitchy.
Right. Yep. I agree. Last question. Did Nia Jax and Tamina, were they supposed to be in cahoots with the Riot Squad, or was it just a coincidence that the Riot Squad was there to beat up Natalya?
They were supposed to be in cahoots.
Okay. I that didn't like come across 100% clear to me, so I
didn't look
it.
Like, and another thing, it looks like Tamina should have been standing next to Nia the whole interview, and as she was about to end, getting behind Ronda when she said, "I was just stalling for time."
Right.
It just seemed like none of that was executed well.
Right. Yeah. Or, you know, if she's gonna say that, Tamina should have hit Ronda before she even turned around. You know, yeah. Or something like that. I mean, it just in my opinion, but
no, I completely agree. It was like, I saw this on a lot of the stuff last night. It was like, this is a good idea. It wasn't executed well, though.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. That's a good way to put it. Yeah, it wasn't the worst idea ever. It just didn't.
It's just they just didn't. I mean, you know, everybody had lost nights. It just seemed like a lot of stuff wasn't landing.
Right. Yeah, I would completely agree with you on that. We got the AOP versus Rude and Gable. During the match, Drake Maverick goes backstage. He's in the bathroom with Bobby Roode's robe. He puts it in the toilet and urinates on it. This is to get back at Rude and Gable for last week when they made all the piss jokes in catering, right?
Yes.
Okay. AOP then runs Bobby Roode and Chad Gable into each other. They finish them with the neckbreaker powerbomb combo, and they retain their titles. I actually don't even know if it was a title match or not, but anyway, champions won either way. The match went 8.5 minutes. It was, I mean, nothing of note. Did you think the match was very good? Because I thought it was just like, whatever.
It was whatever.
Yep, I agree. Next, we see Alexa Bliss meet with Bayley and Banks and offers them an open forum tonight. They agree, saying they're going to come out to the ring after a while. Kurt Hawkins is replacing Braun Strowman on the Mixed Match Challenge. He was Ember Moon's partner, so now Kurt Hawkins and Ember Moon are partners, and he comes out to the ring with her as she's taking on Alexa Bliss. Alicia Fox. And Alicia Fox comes out with Jinder Mahal and the Singh brothers because her and Jinder are on the same team, right?
Yes.
Okay, I just making sure that I had that right. Ember Moon defeats Alicia Fox in 1 minute and 50 seconds. Jeez Louise. Post-match, No Way Jose and the Conga Line arrives to celebrate. Ember Moon and Kurt Hawkins get in the Conga Line for a minute anyway, which I thought was pretty fun. I would love to be in that Conga Line one time before I die. So if he gets released and he does that same gimmick on the indie scene, me and you just got to go so we can get in that conga line, bro.
Definitely. I'm down.
Yes. No Way Jose and Jinder go at it. Their match lasts 4 minutes and 30 seconds. Jinder Mahal ends up winning. This was a tweet. This was bad, bland, and boring. After all these years, Mahal can't work a 4-minute match without extended rest holds. Would you agree with that?
Mahal's uncle was his main trainer, Gama Singh. And Mahal works an 80s style. It has nothing to do with the ability to work. It's the style he chooses to work.
Yeah.
One of the most annoying things that people say is that he can't work. No, he works. He works his style.
Yeah, I didn't think that you would agree with this one because you and I are two of the biggest like Mahal apologists that I've ever met. Because me and you think that, you know, there's nothing like, of course, Mahal could always be better. There's very few people on the roster that are at the level of Seth Rollins. You know what I mean? Like,
but if
it's hard to compare Jinder Mahal to someone like Seth Rollins because, like you said, he wrestles a completely different style. He wrestles.
Yes.
It would be more likely that you would get a similar comparison with Jinder Mahal to The Miz rather than somebody else. You know what I mean? Because they wrestle a similar style.
Yeah, it's a safe style. I hate when people say Jinder Mahal is horrible. He is not. He has his program and he does his program.
Yeah.
It's not horrible. It might be boring to you.
Yeah.
But he's not dangerous.
Right.
He's going to go out there and he's going to put you in a chin lock for 10 minutes. And that's what he does.
Right.
I hate when people say Jinder Mahal is horrible because he's not. Yeah. He's just boring.
Yeah. It's just his style, right?
Yeah, it's just his style.
Right. We see the IC champion, Seth Rollins, taking on Dolph Ziggler. This was actually an open challenge, right?
Yes.
And Dolph Ziggler answers the call.
There's this pitch out where it has this person's face. Niggas like, when you're really excited for a return or a debut, and then Dolph Ziggler shows out, and you see this mean face. And that was the problem. First of all, that's a problem. That's a problem with the open challenge.
Yeah, is that you get your hopes up, and then it's just someone that you've seen last week.
Yeah, you got to deliver, and like they failed miserably this time. And second of all, the problem with it is they go on and they put on a great match. If you look at it in the vacuum of what happened from the beginning of this match, not the card, not looking at them that they fought like 16 times in the last 6 months. Just look at this match. It was a really good match.
Yeah, it was not bad at all.
But people are just tired of it.
Yep, I agree. And let me tell you my favorite part of it. And I pay attention to small things like this. And I bet you do too. I didn't until I started working more. I didn't start paying attention to something like this until the last year when I started working and started learning more about ring psychology and stuff. But Seth Rollins, he loves to do the superplex that rolls into the Falcon Arrow, right? And then he always ends it with a pin. I've never seen anyone get pinned from that. It's always a close two count, right? A near fall. Well, last night he actually ended the match on the superplex into the Falcon Arrow. He got a three count.
Yeah, and it actually shocked me.
Yeah, and I loved that they actually ended the match on that, and he got a clean finish with the superplex rolling into the Falcon Arrow, because now that is a legitimate near fall. People are actually gonna think, oh, he can win with that now. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So I'm so glad that the match ended on that. And you're right, dude, they went 21 minutes and it was a great match. Like you said, in the last few months, they've wrestled 16 different televised matches. So that took away from it. But in a vacuum, it was a phenomenal match.
Yeah. Yeah. If that was, let's just say they brought Mustafa Ali up and they worked that match move for move, the same match, everyone would be talking about it.
Agreed. Yep, I agree.
It's 100%. Just no one wanted to see Dolph Ziggler work the match again.
Right, right. Yep, I agree. Bayley and Sasha Banks come out. Alexa Bliss has given Bayley and Banks an open forum to address their fans. Alexa Bliss arrives and says she's in charge of the women's division, and that's why she's doing this. Charlie is at ringside to get fan questions. I think it was staged questions, but the first question is how they each would change the division. Bayley said she's proud and just wants more opportunities. Banks said that she would send Bliss back to SmackDown. Bliss gets annoyed and stirs the pot, trying to cause issues between the two friends. Bayley says Banks is wrong because she'd send Bliss back to hell.
Where she came from.
Yeah. Alicia Fox, Dana Brooke, and Mickey James arrive and attack the two. Banks and Bayley clean house as Bliss sits there and smiles. Dana Brooke, randomly a heel now?
Well, you got to think of it, and to me, it's one of those things. People want everything spelled out, and then they get mad when everything's spelled out. But you think about it. Alexa just became the GM, and she pretty much said, you're either on my side or you're against me. Dana Brooke joined her side.
Ah, okay. Okay. When you put it like that, it makes total sense.
Yeah, there was no side to join. That's why she wasn't a heel, but shit, I'm joining the side of what gets me on TV.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. When you say it like that, it makes total sense. I get it. I get it, my friend. To finish the show, we get Finn Balor versus Baron Corbin. Here's another match that's been televised so many times in the last few months. Baron Corbin wins in 13 and a half minutes via pin. Post-match, Corbin, Drew, and Lashley beat down Finn Balor, and then they do like a replay of some other stuff going on. Anyway, pretty much kind of a flat ending, wouldn't you say?
Yes. Yeah. It was a flat show.
Yeah.
Like I said.
Right, right.
It was completely, to me, like I said, someone might argue with me and disagree with me, but my half cup full thing, my optimistic view, it was an episode that needed to happen.
Yep. I have a paragraph here from 411 Mania that pretty much runs down the entire show saying, you know, it was a horrible Raw and stuff like that, but I'm not going to read it because, you know, for one thing, like I say every week, like we both say every week, you know, our gimmick is more of, you know, we try to look at Raw as a glass is half full kind of thing. And then when, especially, and you didn't even say that until we went on the air. So like, you know, my reaction to what you said was legitimate whenever you said that this is one of those things that it was a necessary evil. It had to happen to start new storylines, to end a storyline, blah, blah, blah. And it makes total sense when you say it like that. So I don't think Raw was as bad as when I was watching it. I was like, man, this is kind of bad. But then whenever you explain it to me like that and I look over the whole show, I'm kind of like, well, I mean, it wasn't that bad because it was necessary to hopefully set up some better television in the weeks to come, right?
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, I mean, and to me, it's like you won't know if this how bad this episode is for 3 weeks.
Makes sense.
Like 3 weeks from now, if still nothing's happening, then this was a shitty waste of time. My whole thought process that this had to build towards something is just wrong. It's flawed, which I have no problem with being wrong. But in 3 weeks, if you're like, man, Raw is getting better, or this is a really good episode, it started here.
Right. Yeah, that makes total sense. I get it. Hey, we are almost out of time. We timed that just about perfect, man. So why don't you tell everybody where you spend the weekends at, brah?
Man, me and my friend Ryan, we do a show. It's called Around the Ring. It drops Sundays before noon. This week is an episode that I think everyone should go try to listen to because you get a lot of stuff didn't happen in wrestling, but you get the five things we're thankful for in the wrestling world. It was our Thanksgiving episode. Me and Ryan both gave our five things we were thankful for. Just know there's a certain wrestler that I am extremely fond of. that you've heard about a lot that is probably on my list. So, but yeah, it was a great show. It was a fun show. We got to talk positively about wrestling. So, check it out. You can come hit us up Facebook and Twitter. It's the same handle, Around the Ring OK, as in Around the Ring Oklahoma. So hit us up, send us emails. We're about to start doing our end of the year stuff, and we're gonna tell our favorite wrestlers and tag teams and storylines of the year.
Yep. I love it. I thought it was a great show. I listened to it on the way down to Roy City, Texas, early Sunday morning. So I thought it was a great show. So everyone check that out. Around the Ring, okay. Phenomenal, phenomenal show. I want to thank everyone that tuned in. Floyd and I are both so glad to be back after taking like 5 days, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, 6 days. We took 6 day vacation. So that was absolutely phenomenal. Floyd, I'm so glad to be back. I say this every single day, but I absolutely love doing the show with you. I learn something new every single time we do it. So thank you again. Everyone that tunes in each and every day, we truly appreciate it. So from the bottom of my heart and for Floyd and myself, everyone stay strong and too sweet.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face. What is a boy to do?